taking their place in a long, true line of everyday Americans.
Helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me today. I'm going to start out this program, though, a little differently. I'll wrap it up kind of the same way. But today I'm focusing on the big tech side, at least to open with. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, I spent 30 years working in IT. I've done everything from help desk to writing software to project management. I spent almost 25 years as a data center systems engineer, where I worked with large computer systems in these data centers that many of these companies, these high-tech companies, big tech companies, are using. So I'm quite familiar with the concept. I'm familiar with the industry. And I've seen a couple articles that, well, really want to bring to your attention. And I will wrap this into the constitutional purpose in a second. So the first one comes from a woman who has a TikTok handle called My Data Not Yours. Now, apparently what she did is she reached out to Amazon and requested all the data that Amazon currently has on her. Now, why would she do that? Well, she mentions that she has two Amazon Dots in it and one Amazon Echo. If you're not familiar, these are these personal assistant devices, you know, the ones that you talk to and say, you know, hey, Alexa, what's the weather, or something like that. And it listens to you and it responds. And what most people who are not technologically savvy, who aren't versed in how some of this technology works, doesn't realize that that device that you have on your desk, or for that matter, Siri or the Google Assistant, any of your personal devices, they're not powerful enough to understand what you're saying and respond to it. See, when you say Alexa or Siri or Google or whatever, that device is basically taking what you're saying and sending it off to the cloud to be analyzed to figure out what it is you're actually asking. So this lady has a two dots and an Echo, which means she's got three devices, at least three devices in her home that are listening to her 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, detecting enough sound to say, hey, someone's talking. Let me see. Are they talking to me, or are they issuing a command? Now, she got her response from Amazon. She got a folder of audio devices containing over 3,500 short audio clips. Yeah, 3,500. You see, the dots and the echoes, and by the way, this is how all the devices work. The only way the device knows when you issue the command to talk to it is to listen constantly and process that data constantly, which means everything that device hears is constantly being sent to the cloud, or almost constantly, right? There's a certain volume threshold it needs to pick up, but everything it hears is being sent to the cloud for processing. Yeah. Now, she mentioned that none of the audio clips contained any compromising information, but it isn't kind of creepy that she's got audio record. Amazon has audio recordings of her turning on a light or looking for somebody in her contacts, things that have nothing to do with actually dealing with the Amazon Echo. But I want you to think just a bit more. Do you have one of these devices? Do you have a smartphone that you can talk to? Do you have a device or a program on your computer? Or do you have a smart TV? Anything you can talk to is recording everything it hears and sending it off to process. Now, most of these companies claim that once they determine whether or not there's a command in there, once they determine it's not for them, they ditch it. They're supposed to delete it. But again, computers rarely actually delete anything. How many of you have accidentally deleted a document or a folder or something and been able to go to the recycle bin or the trash can to retrieve it? Well, computers by default don't actually delete. They simply mark it as not available anymore. This, by the way, is nothing new. This has been the way computers have worked since the early days of the personal computer. I go back into the 1980s. In fact, I first started dealing with computers late in the 70s, but I've worked with computers since, 1979, 80. I've been deeply involved with them. They don't delete stuff. You think if you delete a file, it's gone. All that really happens is the little entry in your directory says, no, we're not going to use that space anymore. And it doesn't actually get removed until something overwrites it, which is why companies can go back and say, oh, they've deleted the hard drive. You can actually send your hard drive to a company to retrieve a large percentage of the data that you've actually deleted. It's actually pretty hard to get a computer to truly delete something. Not to mention the number of devices that might actually have touched that data, right? So when your device, whether it be a smartphone or a smart TV or a personal assistant, they connect, they send that data to the cloud. There are actually multiple devices on that cloud, multiple programs on the cloud that are trying to process that data. And it takes a while for them to turn around and actually clean up after themselves. So this lady noted that there are 3,500 audio files. Now I want you to think about something else. Do you have one of those devices in your bedroom? Or think about the time you had maybe an argument with your spouse or were having an argument with your kid or your parents or just having a bad day and recognize that everything you said was recorded, sent off for processing, and possibly eventually will be deleted. Are you scared yet? Now, there are a lot of people who are talking about, well, we need regulations, we need stuff. Understand, you voluntarily gave up your right to privacy in your own home when you bought and turned on and activated one of these devices. You voluntarily gave up your right to privacy. You voluntarily are giving over your day-to-day data when you have, whether it's an Amazon device, whether it's a smartphone, again, Apple, Google, doesn't matter. When you purchased and activated one of these devices, we voluntarily said we're going to share all sorts of information we didn't think about with these companies. Now, why do we do that? Well, it makes life convenient, doesn't it? I mean, sure, you know, you're in the kitchen, you're up to your elbows in cooking, and you have a question, and you don't want to go and have to stop what you're doing and wash your hands and you know, go to your computer and type it in. It's a lot easier to say, hey, Siri, ask your question. It's a lot easier to go, Alexa, turn on the lights. I understand the convenience, but we have to ask ourselves, is it worth giving up our rights to have it? Another example. See, now I have an iPhone, and I also have an iPad, and I'm very particular. I turn off the, hey, Siri, listen to everything. It's the first, one of the first things I do when I got these devices was turn that off, because I don't want it listening to me all the time. Same thing on any computer I've got. By the way, my home is behind a security firewall that rivals small companies. Right? I'm not talking about that little box you get from the cable company. I mean, I've got a serious firewall in place. But still, you have to turn those things off. But it's more than just that. You know, for example, I run a small business. The Constitution Study, it's a business. I got to keep track of records of what I sell and what I purchase and all that. So I use a program to do that. Now, personally, I use QuickBooks. It's one of the most popular. I use QuickBooks because my accountant uses QuickBooks, and it's convenient for me to, at the end of the year, take all my data, wrap it all up, and give it to him so he can process that information. Makes sense. My accountant wants me to use the online version of QuickBooks. He doesn't want me to actually install the app on my desktop. He wants to use the online version. I understand. There's a lot of convenience. He can keep up to date with my taxes without me having to send him data all the time. And oh, by the way, there's lots of neat features I could use if I was willing to use the online QuickBooks feature. I could link it to my website so that when someone purchases something on the website, it automatically gets recorded in my QuickBooks. My inventory is updated. Any sales tax I collected is updated. Everything could automatically be put in place right there. It'd be quick and simple and easy. But I don't. Why don't I? Because that would mean having Intuit, the company that owns QuickBooks, hold all my data. Now, in general, I don't so much have a problem. I don't have that big of a problem with Intuit holding my data per se. It's not the fact that Intuit holds my data. It's what it means when Intuit holds my data. The first thing is, well, they're a target for hacking. Meaning, while their security has been very good, and I haven't been notified, I'm not aware of data breaches from Intuit. They're a target. Any large company is going to be more of a target for hacking. Therefore, guess what? My data is more likely to be breached by some nefarious actor. But you see, it's even worse than that. You see, the courts have come up with this idea they call the third-party doctrine. A third-party doctrine basically says when you place your data in the possession of a third party, it no longer has Fourth Amendment protection. Meaning, in this case, if I take my business data and I place it with Intuit, the federal government can subpoena Intuit for all the data on the Constitution study. Now, people say, well, Paul, if you're not doing anything wrong, what do you care? I have nothing to hide, but I have everything to protect. See, the Constitution says before the federal government can search, there must be reasonable search, meaning they must have a warrant or some reason why a warrant is not practical. And making their life easier is not a sufficient reason. Now, if a federal court issues a subpoena, tells Intuit, hand over all the data you have for the Constitution study, well, technically, the Intuit could fight it and say, no, you give me a warrant and I'll comply with it, but not just a subpoena. But why would Intuit bother? Why would they go through the time and effort and expense to protect little old me? They don't. Which is why, you know, all of these cell phone carriers, all of the cloud storage providers, all of the cloud providers, all are handing over tons and tons and tons of your data to the federal government simply because they asked for it. Oh, by the way, that includes everything you put in Dropbox, everything in Google Docs, everything in Apple's iCloud, everything. They don't protect you from the federal government, and the federal government says they don't have to because you've entrusted it with a third party. Therefore, the Fourth Amendment doesn't apply anymore. In the name of convenience, we're giving away our rights. Not just our right to privacy, our right to be secure from an unreasonable search, a right to be secure from writs of assistance, which basically what these subpoenas are. They want the data so they can search through it to see if you did anything wrong. That's a writ of assistance. But the American people voluntarily gave this up. This wasn't taken from us. We were offered a bright, shiny object, and we said, ooh, goody, and we gave up our rights to do it. You know, kind of like the brothers Jacob and Esau in the Old Testament, where Esau gave up his birthright for a bowl of stew, a bowl of lentils, because he was hungry. It was quick. It was convenient. He found it necessary. And then one day he realized he didn't have his birthright anymore, and then he wailed about it. If you're complaining about big tech snooping on you, you gave it to them. If you're complaining about the federal government snooping on you, you gave them the tools to do it. And when they went beyond their mandate, you did nothing to challenge them. Now, a lot of people look at what some of these big tech, these social media companies are doing, and they look at the censorship. But guess what? We gave them the power to do that. For example, there's a report out that Representatives Greens and Banks have both been banned by Twitter, at least censored from Twitter, for referring to Rachel Levine as a man. Now, those of you who don't realize, Rachel Levine is the dude. Yes, he is a man. He's a dude, which means Twitter's going to be pissed at me. That claims to be a woman, so that he is now considered, quote unquote, the first ever 4-star admiral in the Public Health Service. Now, there's a lot to this dumpster fire. But we said, hey, people saying, why are you censoring them? Well, you're voluntarily using their platform. Nobody put a gun to your head and said you have to use Twitter. No one said that Representative Greens and Banks have a right to be on Twitter. Twitter's a private platform. Now, they offered you lots of goodies and lots of incentives to use their platform. All it cost was your data. All the information about you that they collect. That's right. All of it is there. All of it's collected for sale. So when you're complaining that these two representatives were censored by Twitter, well, wait a second. You voluntarily gave Twitter the power to be worth censoring. I mean, the only reason people are upset about Twitter and Facebook and Google and Amazon censoring is because we gave them the power over us. We, like drug addicts, we said, ooh, there's a new free service. Give me the freebie. Never asked what it cost. We gave over all of our data. And then we complain when they use that data against us. We gave it to them. Now, to be completely above board, right, I still have a Twitter account. But I treat that Twitter account primarily as a one-way faucet. I post on Twitter so that people can find information about the Constitution study. They can read about the Constitution, and maybe somebody will ask a couple questions and dig a bit deeper. But I don't look to Twitter for news or information. I certainly don't trust anything I see on Twitter. I got booted off of Facebook. I'm 99% sure because I actually quoted what the Constitution says about how the president is elected. So I got booted off of Facebook. I'm still on YouTube, but I've also looked for other platforms that are less onerous. Platforms like Rumble, Gab. I don't do much with Telegram, but I'm looking for others. See, that's the thing that people seem to forget. You don't have a right to be on Twitter. You don't have a right to be on YouTube. You don't have a right to be on Facebook. They got you to use their free services by, you know, in order to gather data about you and then use it to sell. So when YouTube banned the Let's Go Brandon song, doesn't surprise me a bit. See, we said, oh, okay, we're gonna focus all of our attention on YouTube. Now understand, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, these companies got so much attention because they did something that people wanted and they offered it for free. Well, supposedly for free. It didn't cost you cash. And they were good at it. and they gathered market share. And now we get upset, say, okay, YouTube banned, let's go Brandon song. I can find that song other places. Again, I don't have a right to put stuff on YouTube. We have an agreement. I don't have a right to access YouTube. We have an agreement. If they want to renege on their agreement, well, I might have cause to sue them. Of course, the federal government's tried to protect them in violation of the Constitution. Yeah, that whole Section 230 where they can remove posts for anything they think is objectionable, yeah, that's a violation of the First Amendment. It denies you your right to petition a government for redress of grievance. If they violate the agreement that you signed or clicked on or agreed to, you can sue them. And a court may say, well, no, Section 230. Remind them, the First Amendment. But before we go pointing fingers at these big tech companies, before we go pointing fingers at others, let's recognize we made these companies so large because we used them, because they offered a service. And for the most part, we never asked what it cost. It's a free, you know, it's like, here, you'll just have it. It's free. Really? See, I'm old enough to remember the saying, there's no such thing as a free lunch. There is no such thing as a free service on the internet. If you don't pay for the service, if you don't pay for the product, you are the product. So it's kind of disingenuous to complain that they're violating your rights when you gave them the power to do so. But the good news is if you gave them the power to do so, you can take it away. All you have to do is go somewhere else. Oh, you may have to pay cash. So I recently upgraded both my Gab and my Rumble accounts to paid accounts. Why? Because I wanted services I was currently using from other providers. And while the other providers gave it to me for free, they just wanted my data, Gab and Rumble don't. So I realized that they have to pay for those platforms somehow. And if they're not going to sell my data, well, they need cash somewhere. Yeah, I heard this meme. In fact, I've been working on this meme. I may put it out. It asked the question, why did the mouse eat the cheese? The picture changes to a mouse caught in a trap. The answer is because the mouse didn't know why the cheese was free. We've been caught in a trap because we never asked the question, why are these services free? See, at the in the Declaration of Independence, at the end, the signers pledged to each other their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. Now, I've talked in other times about pledging your life and pledging your honor, but let's talk about our fortunes. See, it's one thing to say, okay, I'm going to give money to some organization that defends liberty. It could be an educational facility. It could be a not-for-profit law firm that defends cases involving the infringement on people's rights. But sometimes pledging your fortune simply means supporting people that and organizations that work for liberty, that don't deny you your rights, that don't infringe on your rights. See, I'll pay Rumble in order to get those features. I won't pay YouTube. That is until the day I find out if Rumble starts stealing my data, well, then that's a whole other issue. But see, now we have a cash contract between us. Same thing with Gab. I pay Gab for access to the service that I wouldn't pay a Twitter because Twitter's already stealing my data. If you're not going to steal my data, I'm willing to pay for the service. We need to start treating people that way. I've been telling this story lately. You know, I've been traveling around and You know, you show up at a town and you're hungry. Let's say it's lunchtime or dinner time, and you're looking for a place to stay. You're looking for a place to eat. You can find some national chain restaurant. You know what the food's going to be like. You know, you have a pretty good idea what it's going to be like. You might see another mom and pop shop. Yeah, you don't know. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's bad. Maybe you look and you do the old trucker trick, right? If you found a restaurant, a hole in the wall, and there was a bunch of trucks parked out front, it was probably pretty good. So you could try that. But if I'm going through a town and I see this sign in the window, I see a restaurant and I see this sign in the window. We respect your rights. No mask, no vaccine, no problem. That's where I want to go for lunch. That's where I want to go for dinner. That's where I want to shop. That's where I want to spend my money. That's what I want to do business with. See, that's pledging my fortune. It's not simply donating money and having to go let someone else deal with it. It's how do we spend our money? And in many cases, it's do we spend money? Do we spend money? Because let's face it, many of the services we're talking about, they're inexpensive. Neither Rumble nor Gab, and by the way, they don't sponsor me. They're not, you know, I'm not using them because, you know, they give me money for it. This is my life. It wasn't that expensive. I looked at the numbers and said, yeah, okay. It seems like a fair deal. So I pledged my money to those services. I built my own cloud storage so I wouldn't be dependent on Dropbox or Google Docs. We have to recognize that sometimes convenience costs you your rights. And we have to ask ourselves, is it worth it? And I think too often we don't bother asking the question. We just see the goodie and we grab it. And only later, when we find out what the actual cost is, do we complain about it. But we did it to ourselves. Now, before I head out to break, I want to remind you to check out HealthyCell.com. Are you looking for better sleep, more focus, and energy? Well, check out HealthyCell. They are a leading innovator in nutritional supplements for cell health. You know, vitamins really haven't changed since the 1930s, but Healthy Cell has a gel pack, not pills, gels. And they're formulated to help you not only live better, but to meet certain things, to do certain things that your body may need. For example, at the end of a long day, maybe you're like me and you get a little fuzzy headed, right? It's hard to focus. You lose the ability to think deeply and work on projects. Well, try Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall. It boosts your short-term focus and your long-term brain power. All with a simple-to-take gel pack that, again, either take it directly, mix it in food, mix it in drink. It's a new way of getting the focus you need without resorting to those energy drinks and energy shots that are full of caffeine and sugar that get you buzzed and then leave you crashed. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 20% off your first order. Just go to healthycell.com/outloud or use the promo code OUTLOUD at checkout, and you'll get 20% off your very first order. Whether you try the Focus and Recall or any of their products, I've been using them, my wife's been using them, give them a try. Be sure to use that promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order.
Let's get real, let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is McCullough Report. Are you tired of your tired vitamins? Consider Healthy Cell. These are pill-free vitamins that are in convenient gel packs. I like the Focus and Recall supplement. I use this a lot. You know, your brain uses a lot of energy, and it depends on a variety of micronutrients and vitamins. Boost your short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall vitamins. So go to HealthyCell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for a 20% off your first order of any Healthy Cell product. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
While the cancel culture is determined to destroy our history, bringing violence and terror to city streets, America Out Loud will enhance its own message of love and honor for the American traditions and constitutional values that have always been the backbone of what America means. life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Is a record player the best way to listen to music? Of course not. So why are you still taking vitamins that haven't been upgraded since the 1930s? Even if your vitamins aren't hard to swallow, it's time to upgrade to Healthy Cells pill-free, patent-pending microgel supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. They taste great, convenient on the go, and they're more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. That's right, you've rejoined the Constitution Study. We spent the first half of the program talking about big tech and the fact that we've given up our rights to big tech. Well, in many ways, we've given up our rights to control our governments. The Declaration of Independence says that to secure our rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Well, let's see what's happening to the government acting outside of our consent. I saw this article, and I love this title, Bipartisan Group of Lawmakers Urge Leadership to Immediately Advance Legislation on Semiconductor Shortage. Now, first of all, whenever you see a bipartisan group of legislatures doing anything, it's 99% chance that they're there to steal your rights. They're there either to spend money they don't legally have or to steal your rights. Now, this gets into a piece of legislation that was passed actually last year. See, the end of 2020, they passed what they call it the CHIPS Act. CHIPS stands for Creating Helpful Incentives for the Production of Semiconductors. Whatever. So they call it the CHIPS for America Act, which it should be another chance to fleece the American people act. But we've been dealing with a chip shortage. I don't know if you realize this, but many of the products you own work off of microchips. And the vast majority of those microchips are not produced in the United States. So there's been a chip shortage. In fact, many automakers have actually been shutting down plants because they can't get what they need to actually build cars and trucks to sell to you. So in their infinite stupidity, a bipartisan group of Congress said, hey, we passed this legislation so that we can encourage places, we can encourage the purchasing of chips. Now we want to spend money on it. Remember, we have a chip shortage in large part because of government's overreaction to the coronavirus. That's right. This is not a COVID problem. This is a government problem. We have a worldwide interconnected supply chain. And when we froze much of that supply chain, chips started flowing. Now, industries have been converted to what's called just-in-time inventory. They converted years ago. And the idea was, rather than spending tons and tons of money to warehouse inventory, they would pay to get that stuff to arrive just in time. And they would save companies a lot of money, right? Because if you bought, let's say we're dealing with chips. So let's say you bought 10,000 of this particular version of the chip. And after using 2,000 or 3,000, the manufacturer comes out with a new version. So now you got 7,000 older chips that may be harder to sell. In fact, you may have to eat the cost of those. So I said, no, we'll do it just in time. So now that governments around the world, this is, by the way, it's not just an American issue, but governments around the world have basically crippled the international supply chain, we have this chip shortage. But here's what I find interesting. See, quoting from the article, it says, the ongoing semiconductor shortage is hurting the automotive industry, American workers, and our national competitiveness by the hour. See what you, okay. So they made the mess, right? Lawmakers made this mess. I don't care what they say about this. The lawmakers and those in government made this mess. So what is their answer? Well, their answer is this nicely named CHIPS Act that they want to spend money on. In fact, they want to spend $52 billion to, quote, expand domestic semiconductor capacity, and they want to provide $2 billion specifically for critical, or what they call mature node, semiconductor chips used in the automotive industry. Now, let's take our little political hats off, and let's ask ourselves a question. Why are semiconductors rarely made in the United States? There are some that are made in the United States, but when you're talking production scale, why are they rarely made in the United States? Bluntly, because it's too expensive. The cost of labor is too high. The cost of regulatory compliance is too high. The cost of hazardous waste disposal is too high. It's much cheaper to have them made somewhere where they don't have all those regulations. So you have the government creating regulations. They're not legally authorized to create, by the way, EPA, right? Union regulations, Department of Labor, those are not powers delegated to the United States, but they did it anyway. They made it more difficult. They drove all this business overseas. So all of you who are complaining about companies moving overseas, understand that they're doing it because the government is making it more effective to do that overseas. And now when that has turned around and bit us in the backside, they're going to pay to get people to bring stuff back domestically. In other words, they want you, the American people, to pony up and pay companies to bring stuff, to bring manufacturing back to the United States that they took your money to drive them out of the United States. They get you coming and going. This problem, if the lawmakers are truly concerned about the fact that the domestic production of semiconductors is relatively small, rather than paying people to make them, because let's face it, there's all the financial incentive to make semiconductors here. If you want to sell, you know, if you can make them, you can sell them, that's great. The problem is the disincentives created by government. So how about you start getting rid of some of those disincentives? Which is just another reason why I say a pox on both their houses, because both Republicans and Democrats want you to pay for their mistake. They want to tax you $52 billion for the crippling of the supply chain and the mess that it made. They want you to pay $52 billion to bring back to the U.S. favored semiconductors, right? Because $2 billion of that, at least, they want to set aside just for automakers. What about all the other chip manufacturers? Or the other people who use, industries that use chips? This is a scam, folks. As I said, when you see bipartisan group, they're either reaching for your wallet or they're reaching for your rights. In this case, they're reaching for your wallets and they're reaching for your rights. Because the federal government does not have the legal authorization to spend money on this. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 says Congress can collect taxes to do three things: pay the debts, provide for the common defense, and for the general welfare of the United States, the union, not the states, not the people, the union, the federal government, none of which is here. They are collecting taxes for something they're not authorized to spend on. That's called embezzlement. That's called fraud. That is a crime. And the American people are going, yeah, well, whatever. I can't get my new car, so this will be great because then I'll be able to get my new car. Won't that be wonderful? And I won't have to pay the extra money for it because Congress is stealing it from the rest of the people. See, American people have been bribed to do this. Now I want to talk a bit about the January 6th debacle. And by the way, I don't mean the actual demonstration on January 6th. I mean the debacle of how this has been treated by government. Now, we have been told by prosecutors that a group of people, a mob, forcibly breached the U.S. Capitol and endangered the lives of everyone inside. You know, was AOC that was hiding under her desk, even though she wasn't in the Capitol at the time. We had Nancy Pelosi. Oh, we were all terrified. We were all afraid. Ah, the sky is falling. Well, see, now there's video footage, finally released video footage. And what does this video footage show? It shows protesters coming inside the Capitol, walking past officers through the business, that officers are actually holding the doors open. It does show officers trying to keep the number of people inside to a certain extent, right? So the people were filing past, and all of a sudden, then the officers tried to stop additional people from entering. It shows law enforcement officers stand aside as people proceeded into the building. In other words, the video doesn't depict a mob, doesn't depict people forcibly entering the Capitol, endangering the lives of others. It shows law enforcement allowing many of the protesters into the Capitol. Yet we have people held in solitary confinement. We have people being denied medical treatment for the egregious crime of being in the Capitol without being challenged by the police. How can you consider that trespassing? Now, if people who did damage property should be charged with vandalism, absolutely. But what we see here is not a riotous mob. We see here is a bunch of demonstrators trying to get to their representatives, their employees, their servants, to advise them, to petition them for a redress of the grievance that was the 2020 presidential election. Then there's more reports coming out about the participation of the FBI and the possible cover-up of the DOJ covering up FBI's involvement in the January 6th demonstration. I mean, the Department of Justice was able to track down over 400 people that were at the event, and there's even reports of Google handing over tracking data to help do that. But we have video of men opening the doors and allowing people to enter, but we can't seem to track them down. And I find it very interesting that only some of the video has been released. The prosecutors are refusing to release the rest of the tapes. The U.S. Capitol Police refused to release the name of the officer who shot and killed Ashley Babbitt. He did voluntarily identify himself. But it makes you wonder how deeply was the FBI involved in the January 6th demonstration? And did they instigate any of the actions that people are now being referred to as insurrectionists for? And when asked in front of Congress, Attorney General refused to answer about the potential role of federal agents. There is video evidence of instigators. Why aren't they being tracked down? The Merrick Garland refusing to answer the question? Now, maybe he has a good reason. There's a possibility. But when asked specifically by Representative Gohmert if any of the individuals arrested in connection with the January 6th event were charged with insurrection, Mr. Garland said, "I don't believe so." So we have a demonstration. We have claims of insurrection. They've formed a special subcommittee, or as I like to call it, the kangaroo court. Yet not one person has even been charged with insurrection as far as the Attorney General knows. So if what they did was not insurrection, why are we having this kangaroo court? Why is Congress acting like the executive and investigating a supposed crime? Why is it acting like the judicial branch and holding hearings and trials? Because we stand by and let it happen. We've given up our right to the consent of the governed. We see Congress acting in direct violation of their commission under the Constitution. And most of the American people do little more than watch the news and complain. When during the committee hearing, one representative showed Mr. Garland two pictures, one of January 6th demonstrators entering the Capitol, the other of demonstrators assaulting the Department of Interior. That was a term that was used in an article at the Epoch Times. He asked them if that was an example of domestic terrorism. Mr. Garland refused to answer. He says he couldn't reference, he said, quote, "I'm not going to be able to reference that specific incident since this is the first I know of it." Yes, yeah, see, on October 4th, protesters from what's referred to as a left-wing group called People Versus Fossil Fuels, they organized a five-day protest at the headquarters of the Department of Interior. They were seeking to force President Joe Biden to stop approving fossil fuel energy products. Now, the October protesters forced their way into the building. Multiple fellow security and law enforcement officers were injured as a result of the confrontation, including some who required hospitalization. 55 protesters were arrested. These people forced their way into the Department of Interior. There's video evidence that the people did not, many of them didn't force their way into the Capitol on January 6th. They fought with security and police officers, something that is not evidence for the January 6th. Yet, Merrick Garland is all about the insurrection, the quote-unquote insurrection on January 6th, doesn't even know about the attack on the Department of Interior. But you see, we the people have given up our right to control our government. We have abdicated our role as citizens in a republic. And then we wonder why our rights are being trampled. We wonder why government has grown to the point where it controls every part of our life. We look at the obvious fabrications around January 6th and go, tisk, tisk, and what are we going to do? See, we've lost this idea of being responsible for our actions and for our decisions. You know, there used to be a saying, caveat emptor, buyer beware. But we've given up that. We want someone else to protect us. We're going to invite in devices that listen to us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We want someone else to make sure that we still have privacy. We're going to use free services under the agreement that they get to use our data, the data they collect about us, and we complain when they actually do it. We've given up our own communication and handed it over to large corporations like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. And then we complain when they use it to their own agenda. We want someone else to protect us from the big, bad, big tech. How dare a private company not promote information they don't like? How dare a private company allow someone on their platform that they disagree with? We watch as government violates their oath of office, violates the commission of the Constitution, destroys our economy, and then wants us to pay for it, all while giving special favors to their preferred interest groups. We sit back and complain. And when people stand up and complain and demonstrate against the illegal acts of several of our states, we sit back while they're labeled as insurrectionists, lied about, held in solitary confinement, held for months for minor crimes, In one case I've already talked about before, denied medical treatment for one guy's been denied medical treatment for a broken finger to the point where the Washington, D.C. Department of Corrections is now held in contempt of court for denying the judge's order to produce the information necessary for this man to get his fingers worked on. We sat back and we let it happen. We watched while Congress created a kangaroo court for political purposes. This is nothing about the truth. This is a political witch hunt. Why should we be surprised? We sat back while those in government at the state, local, and federal level claimed the authority to tell us how to live our lives, what must go on our bodies, what must go on our faces, whether or not we could go out and about and go shopping or do whatever we wanted. And most of us complied. Now people say, well, they forced us to. No, they didn't. They didn't force you. They bullied you. And then you complied. The thing people seem to forget is that government force is a threat. It's still up to us whether or not we comply. Just find the videos of what happened at Attila's gym in New Jersey last year. The government said shut down. They said the owner said no. The government came in and locked the doors. They broke them open. The government turned off their water. They brought in bottled water and porta potties. The government turned off the electrical power. They brought in generators. The government boarded up their doors. They kicked their doors down. See, they refused to comply with an illegal order. They remembered the words of Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Paper 78. The act of a delegated authority contrary to the tenor of the commission under which it is created cannot be valid. Yet the vast majority of American, like sheep, simply follow along. Which is why I spend my time here trying to educate people that you do not have to be a sheep. Just because government says something doesn't mean it's true. Just because government tells you to do something doesn't mean you have to. Now, there will be consequences. Like any bully, they don't like being challenged. But also like any bully, they don't like being ganged up on either. When they signed the Declaration of Independence, Benjamin Franklin said, "We must all hang together, or assuredly we will all hang separately." That is just as true today. If the American people wish to be free, or at least those of us who wish to be free, who value our freedom, our liberty, our rights, who recognize that 90%+ of the acts of government are void, they're invalid, they're meaningless, we must stand. But we can't stand alone. We must stand together. Because if we don't hang together, we will all assuredly hang separately. Now, if you want to find others that are interested in learning and studying the Constitution, head to constitutionscholars.com. It's a free to sign up, and you'll find a group for your state as well as for the Constitution of the United States, and we can start reading and studying and learning and applying. And I'm getting messages from people who are actually applying what they've learned and having it make a difference. I had on a previous episode, Braden Harvey, who learned, he studied the Constitution and laws of his state. Then he went to the school board. And at the school board, he said, listen, here is the law. And you're bound by that law. He was even willing to look at the law enforcement officer in the room and said, by the way, your oath says that if they break this law, it's your job to arrest them. Or back before Facebook kicked me off, the lady who told me of her husband who won a case against members of his county government, in large part because he knew the Constitution of his state in the United States. He had bothered to read and study. I find these uplifting, sometimes they bring a tear to my eye because it's turning this knowledge into action, into recognizing we are not subjects of government. We are its masters. But we have to stand. And we have to stand with each other. I was talking at a group to a group last week, and I love this meeting. It's, you know, I don't know if you've been to several of these meetings, right? I come in and they have a little business meeting, and then they bring me up to speak, and that happens quite frequently. And I'm more than happy to go. And what I loved about this group is they were talking about how do we help each other during these supply chain issues. How can we be prepared? You know, one person said, one person loves gardening. And he says he'll teach anybody to garden. Come to his place, he'll teach. One gentleman said that if you want to do a garden, he will, for free, he will come over to your house. He will look at your land and he will advise you on how to get a garden set up where you've got it. Another gentleman said he was going to be canning. And he wanted to let people know, so if they wanted to learn how to can their own food, he would teach them. This was a community of people that had come together. And this wasn't so much about protecting their rights, but it was about preparing for the shortages that appear to be on the horizon. They weren't looking to government to protect them. They weren't looking for someone outside to come and protect them. They weren't looking for a grant or a law. They simply said, hey, I can do this. How can I help? One gentleman has worked in the power industry. He offered to help with things like solar power and wind power and other power sources. They were hanging together as a community. By the way, this community had just been through a natural disaster. So they were still dealing with the aftermath of the disaster, and they were still willing to come together and work together. And I think that's the attitude the American people need to regain. What can I do to help? What can I do to help my neighbor? What can I help to help family? And then what help do I need? Can I get it from a friend or a neighbor? Rather than waiting for someone with a title or an official office to come tell me what to do. Now, be sure to make AmericaOutLoud.com your daily stop for the latest news and happenings. It's important we all do our part. We share the stories, we share the articles, the podcasts, the videos, so we can continue to help secure the blessings of liberty for America's future.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.